All right, welcome everybody. All right, for those that do remember me from last month, my name is Jonathan. I am your Cicerone certified host and beer server extraordinaire. I guess that's what I'm going with this week. But we're going to have a great time. For those that are just jumping on, we are launching a new city today. It's a city that's very near and dear to me. Not only was it only about an hour and a half, couple hours from where I grew up, but spent a lot of time there as well. And those that have the box already know it is Nashville. It's a wonderful city known for, of course, music, food, and what we're going to learn about today, some beers. And of course, for this month, I've got my co-host, Glenn. Glenn, how are you doing today, buddy?
Doing pretty good. Great to be here, Jonathan. I know some people on the podcast might have seen me here before. I've been here a few times. Great. Of course, as those who are watching this on video see, I'm wearing my Beer Avengers t-shirt. That's the name of a podcast that I host and that you're on a lot as well.
Yeah.
In fact, of all the times I've been here, whether it was being hosted by Molly or Laura or Brian, Molly and Brian both became Beer Avengers after they were on this podcast. But you're the first one who has come on already as a full-fledged Beer Avenger. So
yes,
it's great to be here together to do that.
Yeah, no, it's kind of fun of like all these worlds going back and forth. But
yes,
in either way, we just share beers together every single time, which I think is what we're all here for today.
It certainly
and
is.
So with that, I think before we go any further, I think we should crack open a beer.
I think that's a great idea.
All right. And I know for everyone listening and watching, we do have some fantastic beers from some fantastic breweries in Nashville. We're going to start off with that Southern Grist, the Southern Fest. So it's just good old-fashioned, classic, fest beer-style lager. Let's see what they're doing over here. Ooh, yeah, I'm ready. This one's cracking up. Nice crack. Let's see.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Look at
that. Oh. It's nice to know that even though it's mid-November, which I don't think is quite too late for fest season.
No.
It's after the official time. Talk to any bar or beer store. They're going to start complaining that they can't get this off their shelf now, anything they have left from them. But it's great to have one of these in November as well.
Yeah, and I feel like a fest beer is still like becoming known as like the fall beer. So, yeah. You know, because it's nutty, it's sweet, but we can talk about it. I think we should start tasting. So
all
cheers,
right,
to everybody.
Cheers.
There you go.
That's delightful. Yeah,
I think we're going to say the exact same thing. That's so good.
Yeah, it's a real classic fest beer. It has a nice, you know, those nice bready notes to it. And since it's a fest beer rather than a Marzen, it's a little bit lighter. So that's great.
Yeah. But there is on that finish, I'm getting that really, really nice sweetness, but it's more like that bread-like sweetness. So it's not like a pastry stout or sometimes you do with the Marzens get kind of that slightly like brown sugar, molasses sweetness, but
sure.
Just nice. Like it's a wheat bread. It's like an artisanal farmhouse wheat bread that we're enjoying in a glass. That's great. So Glenn, I know I've spent some time in Nashville. Have you spent much time in?
Not recently. I feel like either Nashville has gotten cooler since I've been there, or I just was too stupid to realize how cool it was at the time. I mean, I felt like when I grew up in the 70s and 80s that I thought of it as a place for country music and all of that.
Yeah.
But and I spent a little bit of time there in I'm an actor and I spent some time doing some touring children's theater. And I can't remember. I was either going through Nashville doing Charlotte's Web or Babes in Toyland and played the Grand Ole Opry.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
It was not part of the regular usual rotation. This is sort of during the day. They're bussing in kids to see it.
Right.
And I know I think that I might have spent Thanksgiving there like in 1988.
Okay.
But everything I keep hearing about Nashville is like, I think at some point people were saying Nashville is the new Austin, that they're like, they're both like kind of in competition for like the cool Southern city.
Okay. Yeah. Well, at least Nashville's not going like keep Nashville weird. Like I know that's Austin's kind of thing, but
sure.
Nashville is known for the music, obviously, and the Grand Ole Opry, which in doing a little bit of research found out it is still, and obviously I don't know why it would not be, the longest running radio broadcast to date.
Yeah.
Which, of course.
And Nashville has, because of that, has some interesting nicknames. They're commonly known as Music City, USA.
Yep.
But I was looking on, just curious to know, like, what are some other nicknames for Nashville? And I found a few. And I'd heard one or two of these, but the Athens of the South.
Yeah.
Because there's so many colleges there. The Protestant Vatican.
Okay.
Because there are a lot of Protestant churches that have their headquarters there. So okay. That's what, here's another one. Smashville.
Okay.
I'm not sure where that comes from. Let me see here. It's a sports associated kind of a thing.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know. But anyway, I'm not into sports. So if anyone wants to mention in the chat where they got that name, if you have any theories, Buckle of the Bible Belt.
Yeah.
Nash Vegas, which I think I'd heard that one too. And another one that's it comes from a rap song called Cashville.
Okay. Which also, funny enough, with Cashville becoming from a rap song, Johnny Cash actually met his wife there in Nashville. Yeah. So
wait, the second one?
The second one. Yeah. The second one. So they, and obviously Nashville's known for country music and that's, it gets its name. But one little thing that I feel like, you know, obviously, you know, there's a lot of things with now it's coming up with like beer kind of. I think that's kind of that competition with Austin of trying to get some of those younger demographics and the breweries. And it's kind of still it's still the South. So, you know, there's you didn't have a lot of breweries besides like distilleries in Tennessee. Sure. And so I think that's coming up. But one thing that I've always enjoyed about Nashville is the food. And obviously we know hot chicken. And
yeah, I think that is the second most popular spicy chicken.
Right. And
probably the better one of the two. I haven't had enough of it I want to go there just to have beer and hot chicken and just do nothing but that for a whole trip there. And I'm sure that I know there are lots of other things to do there, but beer and hot chicken. And
And the fact that it originated, the true like original hot chicken originated in Nashville, I think that means that obviously, yes, we should just go have beer and hot chicken. One beverage, though, that they are known for that is not beer is coffee. And that is actually because the original Maxwell House, which was a hotel, is actually where President Theodore Roosevelt was staying. And he enjoyed the coffee so much that he actually said that it was good to the last drop, which obviously we know is now their main slogan. So Maxwell House is not just a brand. It was a location, and apparently they had really good coffee. So who knew?
I wonder if they have any good coffee beers.
Ooh, I don't know if they partner with them. Now we're going to go on a deep dive between this episode and next episode.
Yeah.
And see if there's any Maxwell House branded beer or at least a collaboration with that. And I know obviously collaboration is a huge part, not only with coffee and beer, but also within the beer world. And that's kind of how this beer that we're having, Southern Grist, that's exactly how this brewery started up in 2016.
Yeah, an amazing story.
Yeah, three friends and their wives. They're very specific about saying and their wives. We're working in the tech industry, came together and just said, let's start a brewery, which is one of my favorite things to hear when people just decide to start a brewery. And
yeah, and so, their original space wasn't even much bigger than their home brewing spaces at home.
Yeah, it was 480.
430 square feet. Yeah, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, that's literally the size of my New York apartment. They brewed in a place this big, which is awesome. And now, obviously, they are much, much larger.
They started that expansion just like 2 years in, which I think is amazing. They started in 2016, and in 2018, they had something like 10,000 square feet was their new spot. And if I read it correctly, so they've only been around since 2016. They claim that they have made over 1,000 different beers in that time, which is wow.
Which in most cases, I would say, are you sure? Like, that sounds weird, or like that sounds like a little inflated. Yeah. However, going into our little bit of our personal lives, I was looking at my Untappd and your Untappd, and within about that same amount of time, I'm at almost 700 beers that I've drank. So I imagine brewing 1,000 beers, knowing as a home brewer, it's possible. It's possible to do 1,000 beers in, you know, by 2016.
Oh, sure. I mean, there's a brewery here in New York. By the way, if anyone doesn't know, we're both doing this out of New York. Jonathan's in Brooklyn. I'm in Queens. And if anyone knows Evil Twin Brewery, they have like every single Friday, they have three or four different things. Some of them are repeats, but so many of them are like, I would imagine that brewery probably has in the thousands. So a thousand different ones. Yeah. I mean, some of them are maybe the old ones that they change enough that it deserves a new title, but 1,000 beers, that's solid. Yeah.
And from what, you know, out of those 1,000 beers, they're not sticking to just IPAs or just lagers. They're hitting that whole gamut, which I think, and with Southern Grist, I've had a few of their beers in the past as well. Yeah. Every single one of them is solid. And
I did see one place where someone was referring to them as the Sour King of Nashville.
Ooh.
I don't know if I didn't notice if the other beer we have from them is a sour or not, but
it is not.
All right. Well, then again, we've just got to go to Nashville ourselves.
We just got to go to Nashville. To
have the Sour King and that hot chicken and the Bushwhackers. Oh, I didn't mention that one. That was I was about to mention that when you talked about the coffee.
Because
I heard about this great cocktail they have there. It's essentially, you know, one of those like slushy cocktails, but it's got like rum and Kahlua and some sort of like chocolatey stuff in it. And it's just like the thing I was watching, and because it was all about the don'ts of Nashville, and what they said was don't have too many Bushwhackers.
Yeah.
Because it's tempting because they're delicious and very refreshing on when you're there in one of those like hot summer days. But it's very easy to have one too many Bushwhackers.
Yeah. I can attest to that.
You've had that.
A Bushwhacker. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so yeah.
A lot of southern states have a variation of it. So you have the Bushwhacker. Sure. You have like the, I think one in Alabama, they call it like the Moonwalker or something.
Right. But, and then New Orleans has the Hurricane.
Yeah. So the Bushwhacker is basically, for anyone that has not had one, there's no beer involved, sorry. But it is basically an alcoholic milkshake. So it is a blended drink, but it comes across more as a milkshake than like a hurricane or a colada, because of the Kahlua, the chocolate, and the lots of alcohol. Yeah, yeah. It's like alcoholic diabetes in a glass, and you just want more and more of them, because you're also having hot chicken or fried food. So you're kind of trying to want to balance out that super savory with all of that sweetness. And so, yeah, don't like enjoy one, but it's kind of like a Long Island iced tea. You only have one, maybe two. You're not going out a whole night of this beverage.
That makes sense.
But if you've never had one, we'll make a whole menu. We'll go to Nashville. We'll have some hot chicken. We'll have some Bushwhackers. We'll have some good beer. I guess some Maxwell House coffee in the morning now. And then obviously you can have little snacks. I was going through the list of all of the cuisines and like all the foods. I didn't realize how many people originated. Like obviously like goo-goo clusters, which I feel like if you did not grow up in the South, which I grew up in Indiana, about 2 hour and a half to 2 hours away from Nashville. And so we got a lot of like those, even though not technically the South, we still got a lot of those foods and goo-goo clusters. Have you ever had these before?
I have I you know there's one of those it's one of those things where I grew up also in the Midwest and about an hour from Kentucky, and some of those southern things made it up to where I was and some of them didn't. I don't remember goo goo clusters being around, but I lived for about a year in Memphis, Tennessee,
Okay.
and I also spent some time living in Mobile, Alabama, so I certainly lived in those places enough to experience some of those like goo goo clusters and moon pies.
Oh yeah.
And I'm sure that there are some beers that are inspired by that. That's also what I was thinking of. Like, since there's so many great barrel aged things, I'm wondering if anyone's come up with a good bushwhacker beer,
Ooh.
like a bushwhacker inspired beer, like maybe
Yeah.
something you'd age it in rum barrels or something like
Rum
that.
barrels, little lactose, little chocolate syrup or something. Yeah, I think that would be little, maybe why not throw a little Kahlua in there? I mean, why not? I'm
I
sure
just had a really
somebody.
great White Russian based one from a brewery in Colorado. So,
Oh.
yeah.
Ooh, yeah. I saw a white, yeah. I've been seeing white Russians pop up more recently. And I guess I don't know if that's a resurgence, but younger generations are starting to watch The Big Lebowski
Well,
again.
that is actually the name of the. I know we're here promoting these breweries, but I guess I should say it's New Image Brewing, and they have a lot of Lebowski themed beers. And
Okay.
they've got sort of an outline of the dude on the can there. And I got two different ones that are both that yeah it's, and one of them is called This Is What Happens When You Find a Stranger in the Alps. And I'm
Yeah.
not gonna I'm not I know
No.
we can put the explicit rating on here sometimes, but I'm actually not going to explain that. And if anyone wants to, if
Just
anyone knows what that, yeah.
go watch Big Lebowski. You'll figure it
Yes, but
out pretty
you have
quick.
to watch it edited for television.
Yes.
That's where it actually comes from. But yeah.
Yes. That's, yeah. No, yeah. And so I think that's, I've been seeing that a lot. So yeah, I think having those like kind of alcohol or like Bushwick inspired would be great. But I mean, we don't need those crazy beers tonight. We're sticking with the classics.
These
This
are, yeah, they're
fest
both
beer,
classics.
I'm enjoying, really enjoying this fest beer. It is a little bit, it's not as clear as some, but the color is right on point. The head's sticking around. And there's just, it's, you get a little bit of the hoppy citrus on the front, but overall it's just really nice, light. I feel like you could enjoy this one not only in like Oktoberfest fall, but like honestly, if it was like 80, 90 degrees, I think I would really enjoy this one as well. And a
Absolutely,
nice
yeah.
hot, wet, hot day.
And the great thing is with climate change, you can actually do that during Oktoberfest season.
Yes, you can. Which is great. Yeah, you go to Oktoberfest, enjoy a nice lager at a, 70, 80 degrees. 'Cause why not? Why not
I
do
mean,
that?
I'm not even kidding, because I was in Oktoberfest celebration in Dayton, Ohio in late September, and yeah, it was everyone was wearing shorts.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think all the Oktoberfest, well, all of them here in New York that happened, it was during October where it rained every single Saturday for the entire month of October. And so, some people were wearing shorts on either Friday or Sunday, but for some reason, for 6 weeks straight, it rained every single Saturday. So we weren't wearing shorts at Oktoberfest because all the breweries were doing that celebration every Saturday. So unfortunately, that is, they weren't wearing that, but we could have. Yeah, I mean, I also want to see what everyone else is enjoying with this. Obviously, in the box, we do have another lager from Southern Grist, and it's just their classic Southern Crisp. So it's just going to be a light, nice, bright 4.4% lager. They're just, making it as simple, as light, as crushable as they can, which I think in addition to their sours. And I see that Jonathan in the chat does actually have one of their sours coming to him soon. So he's going to, Jonathan, on next week, if you have it, let me know. Let us know if you get it in time. And I want to know how that sour is, if they are the sour kings of the South. Nashville.
Similarly to Jonathan, I actually have recently got a couple of really nice Southern grists in a beer box I ordered. One was a Schwartz beer, which I've tried, and it's great. And the other one was a s'more themed stout.
I wanted to come up with a pun on a s'more, and I just failed. So I'm just going to
Honest. I don't know if they're, I mean, they seem a little, little more crazy. It seems like coming up with something like that seems in character for them, but I will attempt to continue to have this conversation and look it up. Cause now that I've said it, I feel like people are disappointed if I don't come up with the name.
No, you come up with the name. And while you're coming up with a name, I feel like, you know, I'm crushing this. I'll give a couple more sips. But we do have another great brewery that we're also featuring this week, which is the Black Abbey Brewing Company.
Oh, yeah.
And in kind of along the same veins as Southern Grist of kind of doing a lot of different styles, they also are not. They're all sticking with mostly Belgian inspired and traditional Belgian beers, thus the name the Black Abbey, which it obviously plays tribute to Martin Luther and Abbey Ales and Mont brewing in monasteries, which the one thing that I found out recently is that Martin Luther, his wife was a brewer. And I wasn't aware of this, that obviously he was known, you know, for, you know, the Protestant history and especially in Nashville, right on that Bible Belt. You know, there's a lot of that Catholic and Protestant and history that you learn about, you know, Martin Luther quite often. But his wife was a former nun. And then after he did his whole journey and was like, I'm finally settling down, they actually bought the monastery that he attended and then that she was a nun of. When it closed down, they sold it to them and that became their house.
Oh, wow.
Which is a little strange. And I feel like there should be like a horror film about that.
I mean, there's a long history of the church and alcohol.
Well, yes.
I mean, the fact that some of the best breweries are like run in monasteries, and the fact that it's Jesuit missionaries brought wine to California, so you know it's all intertwined there together,
right?
And not just with regard to the sacraments,
right? And the fact that, you know, up until 1500s, women were the main brewer, so it makes sense that a former nun would have known how to brew. And so it kind of all matches, but I think that's kind of, I just found that interesting that I had no idea that, you know, with the Abbey and it was known as the Black Abbey, which is where they also get their name, which later they called it the Luther House because it's the Luther House. But the fact that it was all kind of tied together and so that's where Black Abbey Brewing is bringing in that traditions of kind of those Belgian ales, that history of like more of monastery Abbey ales and tying in with Martin Luther all together because of that deep, rich history.
Yeah, I think there's some real philosophical connection to the Martin Luther thing. But before I get into my take on that, I think we should pour this beer.
I think so. I'm getting thirsty again. So, and it's a little one. It's a little beer.
Yeah, it's coming out of the can there. It's just very enthusiastic. Wants to get into my glass. Oh, well, that's a very aggressive head there.
And this is a style that I know they're calling it a Tennessee IPA. I'm interested to see because I know we personally have had this conversation on like Midwest IPAs and if it's a style. So,
well, you just recently brewed something that you call the Maryland IPA. I've got a bottle of my refrigerator right now.
Yeah. Cool. And we can talk about that. But I think, this is beautiful. Sorry, I drink with my eyes too much.
I love how with our lighting, your beer always looks darker than mine.
Yeah.
It's the
exact same beer. Cheers.
Cheers. So when I read the thing on the website about their Martin Luther connection, when Martin Luther just nailed those 500 theses to the wall, I think he thought that the church was getting away from what it should be, and he wanted to bring it back to basics. And I think since so much of their stuff is traditional Belgian ales, I think part of what it is. Well, it's like, okay, we're gonna just sort of bring it down to do something more what we think is the tradition, because, you know, all these many of which I like very much, these crazy off the wall beers that American brewing is all about, this whole gonzo situation, like, nope, we're making traditional Belgian ales, and they're doing them really well. And I also love looking on their website how much they have that sort of religious iconography theme to it, where they've got everything looking like these, you know, Renaissance oil paintings. And my favorite thing on that is their patron saints. Did you see that, Jonathan?
I did. I was looking at that. Yeah.
So I've got it brought up here. Like, so they have their patron saints and they have like paintings of them. There's also videos here, which I haven't watched. But so, like, for instance, Saint Gary, who is the patron saint of the Irish goodbye. Saint Brittany, the patron saint of bathroom besties.
There you go.
And the last one is Saint Larry, the patron saint of hold my beer.
Nice.
So, nice. Yeah. But I love that, like, a really lean into that theme in a really fun way.
Yeah. And I feel like that's, again, I completely agree with you of them just going back to the basics of, and not that there's anything wrong with a s'mores beer or anything like that, but sometimes you just want to go back to beer.
Yeah.
And just beer. And I know we've had, you know, in some of our last month's box, there were some of those breweries that also were just like, we're just making beer. We're not doing anything crazy. And I think that's awesome. But there is a big risk with that as a home brewer, doing something that's not crazy and doing something that's very much traditional, just malt, hops, water, and yeast, you really don't have much wiggle room. And so you just have to kind of hope that you succeed with it. And I know also from personal experience, especially if you're doing any Belgian styles, that those can have, that yeast is a very, attention-grabbing yeast. Is the best, like, it's very, very present. So like it can be very bold and in both a good way, like in your tripels or your quads, or sometimes when you're not making a tripel or a quad, you can get some of those similar flavors even in like a blonde ale. So it's that yeast is a little finicky, but also is like, I'm the star, which is what I love about Belgian style ales.
Although I don't know how much a Tennessee IPA is.
I was gonna say, but we are talking about Belgian ales and we are enjoying a Tennessee IPA, which I am very much enjoying this beer.
I like it too. Yeah.
It's, as we mentioned, you know, there is kind of this pattern coming with like those Midwest IPAs that are, again, they are not in the BJCP at the moment.
Neither Tennessee IPAs aren't. Tennessee and Maryland aren't either, because BJCP just waits way too long to make updates.
Yeah.
We have to come up with our own new styles because they won't weigh in.
Exactly. The last update was 2021, which before that was 2015, I think. So it took a while.
Yeah.
So I would expect we got a couple more years. But this one, I mean, obviously, Tennessee is not in the Midwest. It is in the South. In this can also is playing homage to that as well. That's actually the the Tennessee flag.
I've got an interesting story about that, but go on.
But I'm getting more of that kind of New England-ish, kind of hazy, but it's very orange. And I know there's no orange brewed in this, but yeah. I'm getting that like orange citrus versus just like citrus. Hops are just citrus.
I'm getting it too, but it's a little more subtle than your Northeast IPA.
Yeah, I agree.
And this is something I know because you and I were just sharing one of those Midwest IPAs last night, mm-hmm. and I find this is very similar to that in the sense that it's like it has elements of a West Coast IPA in this, but it's more mellow than a West Coast, but it doesn't really embrace the unfiltered nature in a huge way of the what usually associated with the hazy IPA.
Exactly. Yeah. But I think but whatever they're doing with this, they're doing it right. And I would say, we're not going to say any names, but compared to the one that we had last night, this one's much better.
I agree.
And they're going back to the basics, hops, malt, little yeast, little water, and they're making a really, really good IPA. And one thing which you don't get a lot of with more of those middle of the road or Midwest, the lacing on this is just gorgeous, which you would get more so with like that New England. You're not going to get that as much with that West Coast, but it's just a gorgeous beer.
It truly is. Right. Yeah. The thing I was talking about, I didn't realize that was the Tennessee flag. It's also reminiscent of the flag that we refer to as Old Glory. Early like colonies day, and apparently someone from Nashville actually coined that phrase Old Glory.
Because didn't they actually make the flag there?
They did, but also a guy it was given to someone. I think he was a captain of some sort, maybe a ship's captain, and they gave it to him as a gift at some point. And he just said Old Glory, and that stuck. And then when the secession happened, the Civil War and all that, apparently he hid it, but he kept it, and it was very special to him. And so he like hid it like inside his like bed sheets or something. And because of course you wouldn't want to be seen with that as someone in Tennessee during the war. But he preserved it and saved it, and the discovery of it after the war ended was a big deal. And I'm sure I'm paraphrasing all over the place here, because this is something I read on the internet this afternoon. So if anyone wants to correct me in the chat, speaking of the chat though, is it okay if I mention this?
Go for it.
So we said we were going to talk about the other stuff from Southern Grist. Jonathan mentioned in the chat, the one he's getting is a black currant lemon blueberry cheesecake melted snow cone blender. So we're trying to traditional versus non-traditional. We definitely have a wonderful blend here tonight. And also I did find the beer that I had that is a s'more thing. It's not at all the pun you're thinking of. It's more about how that is prepared, because how a s'more is prepared, because the name of that beer is Light It Up.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Is that the one that said s'mores with chocolate?
Yes, I believe so.
Which I agree with you is like an oxymoron, because s'mores always have chocolate.
Yeah. Maybe they said it that way just so people would really. I will be curious to try this. In fact, who knows? Maybe we'll be trying it on a podcast later.
Ooh.
Not one of these ones, but these one ones we may be talking about before the end of this episode.
Exactly. And I, for those on the video, you saw me when we were talking about the blueberry cheesecake, but for the podcast, that mind blown of a lemon blueberry cheesecake melted. That's just insane.
It is. I mean, delicious. It's funny that I was comparing them with their Thousand Brews to Evil Twin, because that sounds exactly like something I'd see at Evil Twin.
Yeah. Exactly. The only difference is Evil Twin would have, would say, the name of the beer would be like, when I went to the store and I ordered cheesecake, and then all I got was blueberry
a
limit,
snow clone.
melted
Yeah.
snow cone. That would be the name. Yeah.
It would. We're doing a deep dive for anyone out there who's not familiar with Evil Twin, but look them up. They have very long names for their beers.
They're very, very long names, which is what I appreciate about this Black Abbey. It's a Tennessee IPA. Keep it simple. Again, they're just putting that on there. Juicy India Pale Ale is what they're calling it. And I love that all of it says on the can, Tennessee IPA, Juicy India Pale Ale, contains, and 12% ounces. It doesn't have anything after the contains. I think it's the contains the cross, but that's literally all it says.
There we have it.
And it's created, not made.
I love this. We have and these are both, like, as you mentioned, but they're both relatively crushable because the Southern Grist was a 5.4. This one's a 5.5. So very easy to toss back a few of these over the course of an evening.
Borderline session, but obviously this is much bolder than like a session IPA. But still, very, very crushable. Sorry, I just had to enjoy another sip of that.
Yeah, why not? Why not?
So good. Let me see. I'm just checking. Jonathan's going in. Agreed with it that basically one of the beers was also an epic poem that ended up being an IPA, which is a lot of beers tend to just have those massive titles because. And I think that's one of the big things of kind of trying to stand out and try to be noticeable, especially if you're doing something like Black Abbey or Southern Grist, where Southern Grist is doing 1,000 beers over only since 2016. So they have, I'm sure they're running out of ideas on names. But then Black Abbey, on the other hand, is they've been around even longer. They've been around since 2008. Which for a craft brewery, especially in the South, is
that's pretty early. Yeah,
it's pretty early. But I think that's kind of the pattern that you'll see is like a lot of breweries will either have really unique names or they'll stick with like a specific pattern because if you've been around for long enough, you're going to run out of names eventually. Because if you stick with like I'm thinking of a brewery in Indiana, all of their names are female names. So all their beers are like Lorelei or Susan or a Jessica.
Which are you glad to say the brewery? Which one are you talking about?
That is Damsel Brewery.
Oh, okay.
They are a microbrewery in Evansville, Indiana. That's all they do.
I feel like I've seen Lorelei, but it might have been from someone else. But
I feel like a few people have used like Lorelei as a name.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think it's just because of the Gilmore Girls.
No. Although Gilmore Girls themed beer series would be great.
Yeah. It would need to be a coffee beer for sure.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. But I think that's where, you know, people run out of names. And so they're just like, we're just going to start spouting off poems or words or sentences and see to help stand out. Because if you just say it's a Tennessee IPA or it's a Belgian ale and like you don't really have that hook, their fear is that it could kind of go away. But I feel like, especially with these two breweries that we're having right now, the beer alone kind of not just like talking them up because we're drinking them. But they are just like Southern Grist. I've had several. Jonathan's going to have several of them. They do.
And we'll talk about all of them.
Yeah. And they do have really, really good beer with that.
Yeah. When you're talking about like places running out of names, you immediately made me think of Single Cut, which is the brewery I can walk to from my apartment. And it's a New York brewery, obviously. But they've been expanding. I've seen them in Ohio. I don't know what other states they're in. They initially started because the brewery is called Single Cut because Single Cut is a type of guitar. Mm-hmm. So all of their beers at first were named after Single Cut guitarists. And then eventually they ran out of that. So they had to start naming things after the bands or about songs. They still keep it in that theme, but they just sort of expanded. Exactly. It's had to be, always have to be some reference to something where a single gut guitar is involved. But yeah, you're right. You're right. Once you're like, you're embracing that whole world of like, we have to come up with new beers every year. I'm like, okay, well, we don't have any more single gut guitarists.
Yeah. Yeah, I also think of Gun Hill out of New York as well.
Right.
All of their beer is based because of their location, which also really ties to Nashville as well. But, you know, is based all on the Revolutionary War. And so, you know, eventually you're going to run out of names associated with the Revolutionary War.
Yeah, I don't think they ever really stuck to that in a real strong way.
It was very loosely.
I feel like they do that every time they can, but I'm not sure how Void of Light fits into that.
Yeah, no, definitely not. Void of Light, yeah, no. They're like, oh, well, somebody mentioned this at one point on a letter during the Revolutionary War.
Yeah, they certainly do it. Like, in fact, they even like wound up at one point having a Hamilton-based beer, which is pretty cool.
That is really cool.
Yeah.
That is really cool.
Rise Up Rye was what it was called.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah.
That's really clever. Well, enough about New York breweries.
Yes, we got to get back to Nashville.
Got to get back to
this
Nashville.
This is all about Nashville. That's what we're here for.
That's what we're here for.
Yes.
But yeah, I would say, you know, with these beers especially, you know, not only do they, because, you know, you are thinking of the South, right? And even though it does snow like 3.5 inches a year in Nashville, it's still in the South. And so I think that's also why these are so crushable and so like light and easy to drink beers, is because you do have that warmer climate majority of the year. Even though it does,
I mean, yeah, I'll even go so far, they might get 3.5 inches a year, although again, we're talking about climate change. I don't know how, if that number is going down. Because when I was trying to do my research about Nashville this afternoon, I saw a thing. It was strange. It was like one YouTube video about a realtor who was saying, from a realtor, mind you, a Nashville-based realtor who was saying, here are the reasons you might not want to move to Nashville. And she wasn't saying you should move there. It's like, if this is a thing that's important to you, like, for instance, like what she was saying, like, if you don't like driving, don't move to Nashville.
Yeah.
But one of the things that she said was, if you really love snow, don't move to Nashville.
Yeah.
And if we barely ever get snow in New York City, I can't imagine what it's like in Nashville as far as that goes. But,
it gets
chilly, but it's not a lot of snow.
No, you will not get much snow. Which it is in the South. So yeah, it's expected.
It
I wouldn't expect a lot of snow there.
It varies. There are some, you know, depending on the altitude. I think there are some places in Alabama that do have it.
Yeah.
But it's all. Yeah,
well, and in some parts of Tennessee, even there gets more snow because you get the mountains and.
Absolutely. The more mountainous you get, the more snow you get.
Exactly. But with that, with, you know, these are being fairly lighter, more of that kind of Southern charm. But obviously, we've been talking about a wide variety of beers throughout this.
Sure.
What? I think we're already like 40 minutes in. And so my question for you, Glenn, is, and anyone in the chat can answer this as well, and for our viewers, when you listen to this, throw us a comment of what is your go-to beer during like Thanksgiving, because we're only a week away. And so
yeah, that's true.
I always tried to plan my beers in advance in case I need to get something that's a little harder to find. Because my Thanksgiving menu doesn't really change every year.
We have what is your Thanksgiving menu?
So turkey, obviously.
Oh, yeah. I haven't always had turkey, but so it's not necessarily obvious. But yes, that is the traditional choice.
Traditional choice. Well, we follow my
I think last Thanksgiving I had a French dip sandwich at Denny's.
Very well, okay. That works.
There's a longer story involved there, but yeah, I was on a road trip and we had to stop at Denny's and I think I had a French dip and it was good.
That honestly sounds like a great Thanksgiving.
And by the end of the evening, it wasn't even Thanksgiving anymore because we were in Canada.
Oh, there you go. Nice. But yeah, no, we do turkey. And then we do sweet potato souffle, mashed potatoes, and you got to double up on the carbs on Thanksgiving. And then usually like a green bean or a Brussels sprout of sorts, cranberry sauce. You know, we do the classics, cranberry sauce, and then gravy. And that's pretty much it. We keep it simple. Sometimes there'll be deviled eggs in there, but, you know. So we just keep it kind of classic.
And so what beers do you have with that classic menu?
So for myself, I have done like an Oktoberfest or like a Marzen. I've done brown ales, work really well.
RJ seems to agree. He says brown ale.
Yeah, brown ale.
Brown ales or an amber.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say usually I try to get like a brown ale and or like a darker lager. Not quite a Schwarzbier, but something like a Marzen or maybe a Dunkel. Mm-hmm. Just because I want something a little bit sweeter because I'm going to be dealing with so much savory food. But I'm also going to have those sweet potatoes. I'm also going to have some pie in there. So I want something that can kind of also stand up to that sweetness as well.
Absolutely.
Usually I'm not going for barley wines. However, it's never off the table.
I think it's a good one with dessert.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. What about you? What's your go-to?
You know, I have no real go-to. I will enjoy turkey and I might be having that this year, but I've also gone to, done a lot of like restaurant Thanksgiving things.
Yeah.
And I will say that I never feel like I have to have turkey. If there's a nice steak on that menu, that seems like a wonderful, indulgent holiday dinner. And that's why I'll go with the browns or with the stouts. For those of you who are in here who have seen or have listened to our podcast, my name in that universe is Captain Porter Brown Stout, and so I just put all my favorite beers in my name, so you know what you're getting with me. So I will almost always go with the dark, but I think I generally favor foods that are well complemented by dark beers. Yeah. So you're not getting, anytime you ask me a question like, so what's the best beer for this season? I'll probably always say stout of some sort.
Oh, I like RJ's response though to that, because they might be having like a ham. So maybe a red ale or an imperial, which I respect that. Yeah.
I think ham. Which also doesn't contradict what RJ said before, because a red, I keep forgetting this, red is technically an amber.
Technically, yeah. Yeah. And the amber ale, red ale, yeah.
Yeah.
Right in there, yeah. Yeah. That imperial, now what kind of imperial? Imperial IPA? Imperial
That's
stout?
That's a good question, yeah.
Imperial pilsner, which has become a new standard recently.
I did actually recently have, I think this is a beer from your home state, from Taxman. Is that where they're from? Indiana?
Yeah.
It was an Imperial Barrel Aged Red.
Ooh, that sounds really good.
I got two of them. So the next time you're around, maybe I'll share one with you.
There we go. Nice. Yeah. No, I think, and I know ham is also a common Thanksgiving.
Yes.
But also you're going to deal with usually like either sometimes people put mustard on it, I think. I haven't made a ham in years, but also brown sugar. So you're going to have, again, that sweetness. So I agree with them that that's going to be really. I think everyone listening is going to have some really good combinations over the next couple weeks.
I look forward to us all meeting back in 2 weeks and talking about how this all worked.
Now, I have another very important question for you, Glenn.
Please.
Especially coming into Thanksgiving. Pumpkin pie or pecan pie?
I don't know that I want to choose, but I think
you don't have to choose. You don't have to.
Yeah, no, because I don't. Yeah, I guess I don't naturally think of pecan pie as the thing, but I love pecan pie. Yeah. But I think probably I think of Thanksgiving more as pumpkin pie with a dollop of Cool Whip on it.
Well, of course. I mean,
yeah,
that's like the part two of the question of whipped cream or no whipped cream.
Well, actually, Eleanor has something that I'm going to just throw those other ones away for, because she has a chocolate stout pie there.
Oh.
And I, if that were one of my options, that's the only thing I would ever want.
I mean, I don't know what that is.
With bourbon. I'm Eleanor. You got to send me this recipe. This sounds amazing.
I'm in. Yeah. I don't know what a chocolate stout pie is, but we will be doing research.
Yes.
We will be finding this out.
Because I actually make a chocolate bourbon thing for the holidays every year, but we can talk about. Oh, okay. Make it. Yeah. Okay.
This is a staple.
Yeah. Like, because the thing I usually I think I've shared them with you before, with these bourbon balls with chocolate and sour cream and bourbon. And I have getting more, some more from Jonathan. So Jonathan just put a thing in the chat. Says, I'm going to pronounce this wrong. Barmao, a barrel-aged cardamom pistachio coconut stout. Jonathan, what brewery is that from?
And this is a different Jonathan for those that are listening.
Yes, that's right. This is a Jonathan with an H.
That makes sense. That makes sense, though.
Abomination. Oh, I love Abomination. Okay. Yeah. I'm gonna see if I can find that one. That sounds great.
Yeah, that sounds. And I feel like that one, even though it's a little extra, and we've been talking about more simple beers, but with that one being a little extra, I feel like it would also work really well with most Thanksgiving dishes. Like having that with some sweet potatoes, with a ham, I think would work really well.
Yeah.
And then obviously, once you throw that stout pie in there, then everything's off.
Absolutely.
Cardamom. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Limited no, I
release.
think.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just getting hungry because I'm just thinking of all of this. I will say for myself, for the pumpkin versus like pecan, and I know RJ has said both. And that's kind of the route that I go, is I do a half slice of each if they're available. For our house, though, we do a pumpkin cheesecake with a salted caramel. So you're not getting at like super pumpkin,
sure.
Mellowing it out a little bit. But yeah, I think this is a great time of year, especially even like the next week, because I know a lot of people do Friendsgivings, which are probably starting in the next few days. I feel like every year they start earlier and earlier, because people end up spending actual Thanksgiving or around it with their families or friends. So usually you end up going to like three Thanksgiving dinners. So I hope that those watching and those listening, you're getting some good ideas on some beers you can bring as gifts, or kind of some pairings with that, just to kind of, you don't have to bring a melted ice cone, blackberry cheesecake, or whatever, but amber ales, lagers, they're all gonna work. And what I always like to tell people in my tours or events, whatever you like is what's going to work. It doesn't matter.
Absolutely. Well, Jonathan, we're talking a lot about what we're all going to be doing next week. I'm currently thinking about what we're going to do when we sign off from here. And here's a funny thing is like we've talked a lot about the I've talked a little bit. I hope I haven't talked too much about the Beer Avengers podcast. Yeah. And we're actually, as soon as I sign off from this, we're going to be recording an episode of the Beer Avengers. Do you want to just come with me there?
You know what? I am pretty much done with these beers, so I feel like I need another one anyway.
That sounds great. So maybe two.
I might as well just come and grab a couple beers with you.
All right. So I think
the next one.
This might be actually the first ever City Brew Tours Beer Club podcast that has a crossover episode. And so, you know, you're here for this one. And for anyone who's listening to it, if you want to hear what's essentially a continuation of the journey I'm having with Jonathan here, look up the Beer Avengers podcast. It'll be, we never know what you call it before I release it, but it's going to be episode 90. And Jonathan will be the guest, and we'll certainly be talking about you guys here. And you know that we've already had two beers here, so we'll have one or two beers going in there. And Jonathan, I know not only are you a Beer Avenger, you've been on the show many times, but I know you listen regularly.
Yes.
And I know you always enjoy it the deeper into the beers that we get.
Oh, yeah. The more beers we have, or you have, or in this case, we have, it always ends up way more interesting.
Yes.
I'll use that word. Because about halfway through, sometimes we are 3-4 beers in. And
sure.
So any ideas of censoring is just off. So it becomes fun. It comes
entertaining. I try to edit as little as possible, because I also produce the show. I try and leave everything in there. Every once in a while, something comes up like, this is going nowhere. I got to take it out. But mostly it's there. Oh, and Jonathan, the other Jonathan, J-O-H-N-A-T-H-A-N, says he's had it on the subscription since the last time I was on here. So thank you for that. And
perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think with that, because we have been talking about Nashville and a little bit of everything for the past hour, I think we're at a good point to be able to call it a night here. And we're just going to carry it on over like you do with a beer. And you're like, I'm done at this bar. I'm going to go to the next one.
Yeah.
We're going to carry it on.
Many as you want to join us there when that gets released, hopefully you'll do that as well.
Yes. We'll get a lot of our followers coming back and forth, coming to each place.
That's right.
For those that are listening here at the City Brew Tours Beer Club, we will be back right after Thanksgiving. We will be back on the 28th, I believe. Yes, I got that date right. We'll be back on the 28th. We are going to actually be enjoying another brewery that is also one that I've enjoyed personally out of Nashville. If you've already tapped into some of those beers, which does happen to us sometimes.
Sure.
Jackalope Brewing. We will be featuring two of their beers next week, or in 2 weeks on the next episode. They're a fantastic brewery. They do some really, really fun classics and a little bit spins on there. So for all of those listening, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for joining us on this live stream as well. We will see you guys after Thanksgiving. We will be talking about not only more Nashville facts, more beers, enjoying some time together. We might even see how some of those pairings worked for you guys after Thanksgiving, and see how the next of the months are going to go. So with that, one last cheers. Thank you all for joining.
I'm totally empty, so I'm ready for for the sequel.
There we go. So we'll see you guys in a couple weeks. And for some of you, we'll see you here shortly. So farewell, everybody, and have a good night.